Well, welcome once again. The program for today, as you will have seen, the usual pattern this morning, Bible study and Indaba groups at 2 o'clock this afternoon. The second of the provincial meetings of the bishops takes place. So again, we need to be finishing at two. Then the whole range of self-select sessions this afternoon. Worship led by the Spouses Conference this evening, and then a plenary session this evening, which is open to you all, on the environment. The speaker this evening is Professor Chris Rapley, the current director of the Science Museum and a previous director of British Antarctic Survey. He is an expert in the science of climate change. And so that you are not frightened off, we're told, I haven't experienced him personally before, but I'm told he's an excellent and skilled communicator at getting all that science across to lay people. So it promises to be an interesting session this evening. I've heard the concern that was expressed this morning about getting a sense of, for you, helping you to get a sense of what's happening in the conference. And so the Archbishop this afternoon will reflect a little on the first hearing session that happened a couple of days ago. I want to impress upon you, though, that what's happening in the conference, in a sense, is only just beginning to emerge itself. The Indaba groups are gelling or not gelling, as the case may be. The tensions are emerging and people are engaging with the material, as we've begun to do in the first hearings session. So from here on in, you might get a bit more of a sense of the way in which the conference as a whole is moving, in addition to a taste for the daily themes, as it were. The presence and participation of ecumenical participants in the conference, which brings us to today's theme, has been very evident. Cardinal Diaz spoke at the plenary session earlier in the week, and I think a measure of the gratitude of the bishops for the presence of the ecumenical participants was reflected in the warmth of the bishop's response to Cardinal Diaz, I think particularly to the way in which he responded to the questions, which was done very warmly and very graciously. And I think he won a few hearts, as it were. The Patriarch of Jerusalem addressed all those gathered for evening prayer a couple of days ago, and again he was received very warmly indeed. And today we have with us, to mark this theme of ecumenical relations, Archbishop Paul Sayer, the Maronite Archbishop of Haifa. And it's wonderful that you're able to be with us, Archbishop, and I'll invite you to address us first, if you would, for a few minutes. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's definitely my pleasure to be here. My name is Paul Sayer. I am the Maronite Archbishop of Haifa and the Holy Land and Patriarchal Vicar General in Jerusalem, Jordan, and Palestine, and I'm originally from Lebanon. You see, I cover quite a bit of terrain there. And I'm a member of the delegation of the Holy See here. But of course, today I will be speaking in my own name, and I will be very happy to answer any questions about Jerusalem or the area if you felt like so inclined. First of all, let me start by saying how honored I am to be at the conference and how grateful to His Grace for the invitation. And it's not only myself, but also the ecumenical guests in general that I mix with. We're very grateful for the hospitality and the inclusion. You know, we came here as observers, and as soon as we arrived, we were told, no, you're participants. So this is really the ecumenical spirit that we value greatly in this conference. And of course, as far as I'm concerned, the level of relationships, warmth of relationships between the Anglican Communion and the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church. Of course, since 1966, there has been a process of ecumenical dialogue between our communion and the Anglican Communion, which started with the historical visit of Archbishop Ramsey to Pope Paul VI, who then issued together a declaration where they affirmed that Christians belonging to these two communions may be animated by the same sentiments of respect, esteem, and fraternal love. Sentiments, of course, that they decided to develop further and to the full, if at all possible. Now, for that, they decided to inaugurate a dialogue between the Roman Catholic Church and the Anglican Communion, a series of dialogues, actually, in depth. And those dialogues were to be based on the scripture, of course, and on our common ancient traditions, with the hope that such dialogue may lead to the visible unity in truth and in love, for which, of course, we all work and for which the Lord himself prayed before he died. Now, this led to the establishment of the Anglican Roman Catholic International Commission, you know, ARCIC for brief, which has done a lot of good work and reached a certain number of agreements. As expected, of course, those discussions have not been without difficulties. But what we shared and we share in common in our Christian belief and ecclesial life made it possible to keep growing together and to keep going forward together in this dialogue. Now, as we went along, we felt that this good work should not be wasted, and we should see how we could use it actually on the ground. So this is why in the year 2000, the previous Archbishop George Carey and Cardinal Cassidy met, and they decided to establish what came to be called the YARCUM, which is the International Anglican Roman Catholic Communion for Unity and Mission. Now, we're trying to use the fruits of those dialogues and see how we can actually put them to use for the ecumenical agenda, because after all, this is what we are all about. You know, we're not dialoguing for the sake of dialogue. You know, we want the unity of the church, the visible unity, to be advanced. And that commission was mandated to, as I said, to see how the fruits of dialogue could be used in order to witness jointly to the unity and mission of the church. This means that we were and we are willing to act together, not only to speak together. Now, this is the spirit that has always, and I trust will always, help keep the dialogue alive and well, despite the differences and difficulties that we may encounter on the way. By continuing this dialogue, we hope that the two communions, the Catholic Church and the Anglican Communion, will address the important issues involved in the ecclesial life and ethical issues as well that emerge nowadays. Let me conclude by saying, when I was invited, got the invitation to this conference, I was really excited, and I really wanted to do what I did personally, I started praying more for the conference. And then I enlisted all our convents and monasteries and priests and nuns, you know, to pray. I feel that prayer for us in our ecumenical growth is something really vital. So we are very eager to see this conference succeed. And I feel it is of utmost importance that I, as a member of the Catholic Eastern Church, the Church of Rome, join in prayer with as many people as possible in solidarity with the Anglican Communion on this particular occasion, because I believe that ultimately the unity will come to us as a gift from above. The gift, of course, that the Lord doesn't want to happen without our own commitment to this very, very important cause. Very important, you know, because for the Lord, this was vital, and this is why, as we know, he prayed at the end of his life for it, so that we all may be one, so that the world may believe. Thank you.
There was a query about the spelling of Archbishop Sayer's name. It's S-A-Y-A-H. S-A-Y-A-H. At the beginning of the conference, I said we hope the Archbishop of Canterbury would be with us on three occasions, and so far, so good. We reached base two today, Archbishop. We're glad in your very busy schedule you're able to be here, and we invite you to make whatever opening remarks you'd like to.
Thank you very much. I'll try to be brief and just make some observations on three areas. First of all, on what you might call the narrative of the conference, the process. As you'll have gathered, on Wednesday we had the first of the open hearings in connection with the Windsor Continuation Group, the group that's working on the implementation of the Windsor Report. That was quite deliberately crafted as an opportunity for anyone and everyone to make their observations on some of the most difficult situations in the communion, simply to lay out their feelings and their thoughts so that the group could reflect on them and bring them back to a further hearing. Now, that's a reminder that in addition to the daily rhythm of Bible study and Indaba group, there is throughout the conference a sort of deeper groundswell of work in other areas, and the Windsor Continuation Group continues its work. Over this weekend, there will be some further work done by a group of people reflecting on the Indaba process so far. Lots and lots of material has come in. Each group has identified someone who will be part of that bigger reflection group. Monday, there'll be a chance to feed some of that back in. Now, I think that so far, the conference is, if you like, organizing itself into different periods. There was the initial few days when we were praying together, reflecting together, getting to know one another, not doing very much business. We've begun to grapple with the business through the regular group work and also the work that I've just described through the hearings, through the groups that are servicing those. Yesterday's remarkable event in London was a little bit of a watershed. We're conscious that as the reflections group feeds back in over the weekend, next week we shall be looking at quite a lot of sensitive issues, and all the groups involved will be working perhaps more intensively. As you've heard, the Indaba groups have been doing their work systematically day by day with, I guess, as is inevitable, varying degrees of comfort and success. But the general feeling we have is that probably rather more than 4 out of 5 of the groups are working as we hoped they would. And various issues have arisen about, is there too much detail in the suggestions for running the groups? And so in response to that, we've tried to simplify the process a bit and remind people that they can adjust that, so long as they keep to the flow of general subjects as the time goes on. That's how we've handled it. Okay, second remark, very briefly, is on yesterday's event in London, where I think everybody who participated felt part of a rather remarkable occasion. where we were able to say something which I hope was clear and straightforward to our government, and actually hear something pretty clear and straightforward in response. People's reaction to what the Prime Minister said was uniformly very positive and very hopeful, and they felt that they then had a message to take back to their own governments around the world, and that was part of what emerged from yesterday very strongly. Thirdly, very briefly, because you've already heard Archbishop Paul on this subject, just a word on the ecumenical business of today. You've heard that we'll be looking at the International Anglican Roman Catholic Commission on Unity and Missions document on practical cooperation. We've also already, during this week, looked at the report of the Anglican Orthodox Doctrinal Commission in what I gather, I wasn't able to be there, was a very lively seminar in which Anglicans disagreed with Anglicans and Orthodox disagreed with Orthodox in fine style. But one thing I would like to say is that in the conversations I've had with a wide variety of people among our ecumenical friends, the same message has come through. It's come through to me from a commissioner in the Salvation Army and from a cardinal of the Roman Church. Your issues, they say, are everyone's issues. And that's why we are grateful to be participants. It's not as if the Anglican Communion alone has problems about authority, problems about scripture, theology, ethics. We all have these problems. You happen to be dealing with them in a pretty acute way. We need to be part of that discussion. We want you to be part of ours. So that's been something that's come through from diverse quarters and I think has been helpful and encouraging for some of us to hear. Thank you.
Thank you. I neglected to say right at the beginning, just to remind you, we have with us as ecumenical participants 8 bishops from Lutheran churches, 8 from Orthodox churches, 4 from Oriental Orthodox churches, or there are 4 Oriental Orthodox bishops with us, 8 Roman Catholic bishops, and 18 representatives from non-Episcopal churches. So we have ecumenical participants in many of the 80 Bible study groups, and I think I'm right in saying in all of the Indaba groups. So questions, Reza.
Hello, Archbishop. This morning we got a document dropped off from the Windsor Continuation Group, and at the very bottom, they commend the suggestion for a Faith and Order Commission to act as an international clearinghouse. Is this something that you commend also, and how would you envisage something like this working?
Thanks. I don't think I'd want to say too much about the detail of that, because it's a flag raised to see who salutes, in a sense, at this stage. But there is a very strong feeling that we need another kind of structure in the communion that will be a clearinghouse, as I once put it, for some of these issues. And I think there's quite a head of steam behind that, just to sort out the sort of issues that are arising, what level of seriousness they're at, where they might best be addressed. So I'm actually quite enthusiastic about that as a proposal. We'll see how it flies.
Thank you. Was there no one on that side? Yes, sir.
My name is Trevor Grundy from Ecumenical News International. Archbishop, you said that you spoke to somebody who said your issues are everyone's issues. Could I ask Archbishop Paul, how long do you think it's going to be, Archbishop, before the question of women being ordained in the Catholic Church and gay rights for people in the Catholic Church are as big an issue in your church as they are in the Anglican Church now?
The issues are there, as His Grace said. Now, they are dealt with in different churches in different ways, and they're dealt with in different countries as well in different ways. So those issues are on the table. I don't know for how long this will be, when it will be more really a burning issue or not, but the issues are there. And we're not shying away from the issues. We discuss them calmly, and we are developing also mechanisms and ways of dealing with those problems that may be slightly different from the ways the Anglican Communion has. But yes, those issues are on the table. And they are being dealt with.
Thank you.
Calmly.
Up the back.
Yes, sir. Richard Jordan, Ask Congress TV. Your Grace, this morning in the spouse's plenary, your statement to the Bali climate change delegates was played. Will you be sending a similar message to Poznan, Poland this year when the delegates meet there?
I haven't yet discussed this with those others who collaborated in that statement last year, but I hope we may well be doing something similar.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Archbishop Gavin Drake, the Sri Lankan service, you received a delegation of young people who attended a pre-Lambeth conference, a meeting in Leicester this week. What to you was the most important part of the message that they brought to you, and what will you do in response?
Well, interesting you should ask, because they did in fact challenge the bishops present to make one or two specific promises to the young people for the next 12 months. And they had indicated their wish that the English delegates, their wish to have a meeting with me during the next 12 months, a group of people representing the Church of England Youth Network, and also to raise the question of whether there should be young people's representation on the Archbishop's Council. I've promised to have that meeting. I've promised to raise the question about the Archbishop's Council. It's really in the wake of a number of provinces having said we have been trying to draw young people more into our general decision-making processes and consultative processes. Seems a good thing to do, but actually, in the past few years, we at Lambeth have had an annual youth day in which we've invited about 100 teenagers and early 20s for the day to Lambeth Palace to say what they want to say to the Archbishop and for the Archbishop to say what he wants to say to them.
Thank you. Yes.
Sharon from Integrity and the Lambeth Witness. I'm seeking to understand how this Windsor continuation process is going on, and I'm hoping you can help this laywoman from Texas understand, since the Anglican Communion is not a church, and since the Lambeth Conference has no authority over anyone or anything, how are you going to create this covenant and impose it on this communion that is not a church?
I go back, I think, to what I said in my opening address last week. I'm looking for consent, not coercion. But unless we do have something about which we consent, which we trust to resolve some of our differences, we shall be flying further apart. And the point I was trying to make on that occasion was it's not as if we can just coexist without any impact on one another as local churches. There have to be protocols and conventions by which we recognize one another as churches, by which we understand and manage the exchange between ourselves. The difficulties we presently face us have to do a lot with that recognition and its failures. Can we find a consensual means of dealing with that? Because no one has the authority to impose something. We have to do it by consent. But that also means some may consent, some won't, and that in itself has implications. But just before I finish, the Anglican Communion isn't a church. Well, it's a moot point. I think we've always rather avoided the question of whether we are or aren't. We are not the Lutheran World Federation, nor are we the Roman Catholic Church. Where in between that do we belong? That's what we're trying to answer.
I've acknowledged four people already, so we'll take those, and I think that might run us out. I've seen you, Ruth. You're the fourth.
Thank you. Your Grace, so one of your predecessors, Craig O'Brien, the Anglican Planet, one of your predecessors wrote something to the effect that outward unity is only recovered so fast as inward life. And I wonder if you might say something about that in relation to Cardinal Diaz's remarks on spiritual Alzheimer's and ecclesial Parkinson's.
I think what Cardinal Diaz was reminding us of was that our past is not an embarrassment we have to put behind us. It's a resource out of which we grow. And interestingly, that came up this morning in our Bible study group in discussing the different senses we might give to the word tradition. Tradition as what somebody once called the charismatic memory of the church, which is the process of handing on what is precious. Traditions as the ways in which that's embodied, which may be more or less successful, life-giving and authoritative there. So I think the reminder was a timely one. We are generally, not just as a church, but as a culture, a bit inclined to think the past is something we can do without. I don't think a historically based religion like Christianity can afford that.
Gabriele from Rome, Civita Cattolica. I would like to ask Bishop Saya. You come from the Maronite Rite, and that is part of the Catholic Church. There are groups within the Anglican Communion that would like to join the Catholic Church. So what is the politics of the Vatican? Because on one side, the Pontifical Council of Christian Unity wants to have the dialogue with the Anglican Communion. But on the other side, the Congregation of Faith that is working with these groups. So what is your opinion about that?
Well, first of all, you asked about the Maronite Church. Yes, we are an Eastern Rite Church, and we are the only Eastern Rite Church which does not have an Orthodox counterpart. So we've always been with Rome. That's precision, you know. Now, if you're asking about Anglicans, you know, applying to come to us as a Maronite Church is one thing, or to the Roman Catholic Church as a whole is another thing. But the main principle is this. We are partners in dialogue. We respect each other greatly. We respect each and every person who inquires, a Roman Catholic person wanting to become an Anglican or an Anglican wanting to become a... This is an issue of conscience. This is not an issue that one can take lightly. So we deal with those issues with a great deal of respect for the person and for the community that person is coming from.
Thank you, Yusuf. Archbishop Hans Iger from Virtue Online. And my question is, why was a Ugandan bishop who was deposed several years ago present as an official resource officer here at Lambeth and therefore able to mingle with the bishops in the secure areas just like an invited bishop was able to?
I'm aware this problem has arisen. I wasn't aware in advance of this. The details being looked into. I don't know, Philip, you've heard any more information.
It was answered earlier in the week, Archbishop, so those details can be provided again if you didn't get them earlier in the week. The question was answered here by myself earlier in the week. Ruth.
Archbishop, I wonder if I might ask the mood of the conference up until now, beyond the retreat, the working days, what you hope the mood will be in the next few days, and what in an ideal world you would like to say in your reflections document at the end of the conference?
Well, I shan't give away what I'd like to see in the reflections document. You won't be surprised to hear. But what I hope will have emerged from this week is a sense that it is worth working at staying together. That relationships confirmed and deepened during this week will have made people see that it's not... Yes, that the unity and cooperation of the communion is not a small thing, and its loss is not to be taken lightly. I hope if that's the only thing that comes out of this week, that'll be something, and I'd love to see that sustained during the days ahead.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your attendance and participation, and thank you for your understanding of the tight deadlines we're under. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you.